Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about financial planning, for the new year. And to lead us in that discussion is Joe Sullender, Vice President of Investments at Financial Strategies Group of Wells Fargo. Say that three times fast. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And Joe, of course, is with us at NITP, and he does the financial planning portion of many of the seminars. Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, GovExec columnist, and you're above the fold now, right?
Oh, yeah. We got a new website on GovExec. I think it comes out this week, sometime this week.
Right up top.
That's what I hear. I haven't seen it yet.
That's great. And fellow seminar presenter as well. And Tammy and I co-host the show. My name is Bob Lines. I'm a tax, a little bit finance type. I have to call Joe for the answers for that and Tammy for the answers to the benefits if I ever get asked that kind of
information. The three of us together, we got something.
Okay, so let's start.
Let's do it.
Let's start spinning. So in the green room, we talked a little bit about how we would start this off. And for those of you all listening, which I hope there's a bunch, live, and I know there's a bunch when it's archived. It's about 10 after 10, Monday a.m., and today is January 30th, 2012, and we're here for about an hour. Please call us if you have a question, 202-465-3080. Do not call us after 10:58 a.m., January 30th, because we're not on the air, but you can email us, and we'll talk about that later. Anyway, Joe, financial planning, and we talk first. We're going to walk through the different phases of one's career, but started at the latest first, right?
Okay.
So pre-retirement, we're going to get our house in order, whether it's going to be this year or next year. What are we looking to do financially? What do we have to define anything, or just say I'm retiring?
I think most importantly is figuring out if you can actually afford to retire and what your lifestyle may look like, and if it's the right time to do so. I mean, I think there was a study, Tammy may know the details of this, but a study done a few years back in OPM did that they found that some enormous percentage of federal employees felt like they were on track to retire at their eligibility, yet only about, I think it was like 20% had actually done the math to figure out if it would actually work. You know, I think a lot of times people say, well, I'm going to have a certain amount of my income replaced from the annuity. You know, I'll cut this, live off that. I probably won't need much more. What I like people to do is sit down and figure out what sort of income do they think they're going to need in retirement. I think a good place to start is figuring out what kind of income you need while you're still working. What are you really spending on a monthly basis? I do that by just basically looking at their take-home pay and saying, what are you bringing home? How much of it are you saving? Can we replace that right after you retire from your annuity, Social Security, whatever other income you might have and your investments?
Tammy, I good point, Joe, but let's pound it home a little bit. Now, this person was a CSRS person. It was a good few weeks ago, young lady, 42 years of service. And I said, I just bet you're going to bring home more in retirement than what you do on the job. She was very offended. That's impossible.
How could
that be?
Well, under the old retirement system, which there's still, I guess about 15% of the federal workforce still falls under the civil service system, that one allows you to work long enough so you can actually replace 80% of your, what they call your high three average salary. But when you consider the fact that once you're retired, you're no longer paying into retirement, which is 7%. You don't pay the Medicare tax, 1.45%. A lot of CSRS employees are maxing out their TSP accounts with, you know, $22,000 or $22,500 this year. So when you take all those deductions that come out of your paycheck away, and then you add that back into your retirement, that 80% could be more than your net take-home pay. So for someone who has that much service with that much replacement income, I wouldn't worry about them being financially ready. The majority of federal employees, however, aren't in that position. They don't have 42 years. They're not under CSRS. And they still want to retire with, you know, 30 years of service. Or sometimes I even meet people with 22 years of service that think they're going to replace enough income in retirement, which could be next to impossible.
Well, you hit on the big thing, which is take-home pay. This is why I focus on it on an after-tax basis when I'm doing this for my clients, is we try to figure out what is it you need in your pocket every month to live. And somebody could be making, you know, a gross number of, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a month, but really after all those things Tammy mentioned that come out of your paycheck, your net take home is much smaller. Then maybe that net take home, you're not spending every single penny of that. Maybe you're saving $500 a month into a credit union or bank account or some sort of investment. So you don't need to replace your full total salary. You just need to replace what it is you're bringing home. And Tammy makes a good point that a lot of the CSRS employees find that their take-home pay from the annuity is actually greater than what they were actually living off of when they were working. But whether that is the case or your FERS or whatever, it's important to, I think, draw that distinction to figure out what the delta is between what your normal paychecks were putting in your bank account and what your retirement paychecks will put in your bank account.
But then we need some wizardry from you because the FERS folks now have the thrift that they have to grow, mm-hmm. maintain, and be aware of how to, what do you call that, rebalance, if they're rebalancing themselves mm-hmm. or whether the thrift does it. And, of course, Social Security is, I'm sure, going to be there. The question is, will it be there as we now know it? I don't know. I'm not political, but if I was betting, it might drop. But anyway, no one knows the answer to that, so let's go to the other. When you address somebody pre-retirement or close to pre-retirement and they've got the money in the thrift, should it always stay in the thrift? Should some come out and go into an IRA? And then does somebody really have to tend it? Because most people are baffled by money management. Mm-hmm. It involves money and math, and that's just something that they don't want to be.
Magic.
And magic. And they don't want to be artificially exuberant because they had a good day, and they don't want to be artificially depressed if they had a bad day. So how do you talk them off the ledge, Joe?
Well, it definitely that gets back to that delta. If there's no delta, if you're going to get the same, like a CSRS employee with 30-plus years, if you're going to get the same take-home pay from your annuity that you need to live off of, it's sufficient. The TSP isn't needed for income. You can really do whatever you want with it. You can be more aggressive, be more conservative. It sort of comes down to your own risk tolerance and comfort level. But the first thing I would do is, if there is a delta there, figure out how to invest that money properly, whether it's in the TSP or you move it to an IRA, to be able to generate the income that you need. Generally, I think the biggest advantage of leaving it in the TSP is the fact that it's less expensive. It can be easier to manage if this is very difficult for you to this isn't what you do. It's you know, some people, the simplicity of having just a handful of choices is better. I think the G fund is another appeal of leaving it in the TSP. The G fund is safe and pays a very significant rate of return for money that is safe. In other words, it's paying a lot more than your money market accounts are right now. It pays long-term rates, even though it is technically short-term money. And then the people that might find the IRA more attractive are those that I think may be using withdrawals, because the withdrawals are far more flexible. The TSP is very limited in the flexibility on how you take the money out. And in addition to that, you have a lot more investment flexibility. So I think the more risk that you're taking as far as investing in stock funds, bond funds, there's a lot more variety in an IRA. And, you know, either with the right advice or with the right work on your part, I think you can find a better management of risk in that particular mix.
Right. I've recently heard from the class members that were of ultra-cautious persuasion talking about moving money from an IRA into the thrift mm-hmm. so we could get into the G fund. I'm not so sure everybody understands that you can do that at any age, and mm-hmm. it's TSP Form 60 for the non-believers, and they can move only the taxable portion of the IRA. They can't move the non-taxable portion, but they were doing it only to get into the G because in their IRA they had it in the CD making half a percent, mm-hmm. and they said, I can do much better there. Now, I couldn't argue with them, but I could go on about, well, you know, that's not where all your money ought to be, because you don't need it all at once, mm-hmm. and like you say, you can expose it to other opportunities that aren't necessarily so crazy. It's funny, some of the financial stuff that I read, like in the papers or some of the things you get on the way, they talk about the 4% solution now. And, you know, it used to be 10%. Now it's, can you get 4% if you buy a solid company with a dividend rate mm-hmm. of return? This is your world. Mm-hmm. I just read about it.
Well, one thing I've heard is that you'll see a 3-4% number thrown around as a way to kind of ballpark, if I have $300,000, how much can I withdraw from it every single year without really a worry of running out of money? And I certainly, with 3 or 4% is kind of the quote rule of thumb. I am like the big, I shoot down every rule of thumb I see because there's so many different scenarios that come into play. But it is a good way on the, I guess, the back of a napkin in a restaurant to try to figure out whether you're on track for retirement, what kind of income to expect from your money. But I probably would look at it a little more scientifically than that.
I agree, because some of them come in and say, I can take 5% out. And I go, yeah, but what are you going to do once you hit 80 for food?
That's the scary thing that I think people have is that, you know, they're going to get a certain amount from their annuity, and that's coming every month as long as you live. You have your Social Security check, which is a lifetime check. But if those two checks aren't enough to pay your expenses, if that's not enough to cover your living expenses, like, how do you feel secure that you're not going to run out of money if you have just a set amount in your investments?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you make sure that you're not retiring too soon?
And one thing I don't like that I hear from a lot of people is they basically say, my annuity is so safe, I'll be really, really aggressive with my other money. And to me, that's not always logical, is that I like to think of it, like I've said several times, the delta between what do I need from that I'm not getting from my annuity, and I need to invest my money to generate that. That might require aggression. It might be fine to put it all in the G or put it all in the bank. So it's sort of one of those questions that you have to look specifically at your situation to figure out how aggressive or conservative that you need to be. And on top of that, make sure you're not more aggressive. Even if you need it, you're not more aggressive than you can be comfortable with. Because then we run into the problems of you go through a bad market, you sell everything, and pull the whole thing up by the roots.
All right. There are a fair number of people that listen to this show outside the Beltway. Inside the Beltway, of course, they can come to listen to you and Tammy, and of course should. But for those that can't, are there any decent computer programs that somebody that isn't necessarily inclined towards computers but knew how to work around? I think they have one on the website for the TSP called the Ballpark Estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even I understand that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking at something. It was MS whatever it is, money. And it was very simple, but you could kind of play with it by exactly what you say. Assuming a certain rate of return, what does that do to your money? Of course, if you push it up, money lasts till forever. But if you get more realistic in today's rough environment, you sometimes run out of it.
Yeah. There's sort of three levels of this, I would say. The first is you can find a lot of those online calculators like the TSP website has. Just Googling retirement calculator, you'll find a lot of them. Obviously, those are going to be pretty straight line, basic, am I headed in the general right direction kind of thing. The second level is you could use a software like a Microsoft Money or a Quicken that has more sophisticated maybe calculators in it. A spreadsheet, you know, if you're handy with building a spreadsheet, you can build basically a cash flow analysis of, okay, here's where I am at 55, here's what it'll look like at 56, and kind of forecast it out there. I'll pimp my spreadsheet out here a little bit. We will give my email address. I do have a template of this that I'll send anyone that may want it. So that's something I offer in the seminars, just sort of a template where you can see what I'm talking about, how to kind of forecast this year after year and see sort of where it all heads. Am I going in the right direction? Do I need to be more aggressive? Can I afford to retire? And then the third level of it, which you probably would get by meeting with a professional, is the more sophisticated risk analysis. It takes into account, you know, you can make a spreadsheet or an online calculator and say, I'm going to get 6% a year. We're not going to get 6.0% in every single year. Where the more sophisticated analysis takes into account the volatility of the markets and the unpredictability from one year to the next. So you might find Monte Carlo analysis.
Is that Monte Carlo
stuff?
That's what that is,
okay. Yeah. And so, not to boggle the minds with that, but it does take into account a lot more volatility, which is, I feel more comfortable with that. But that's not the kind of thing the average person's going to sit down with a pen and paper and figure out.
Okay, so for us average persons, what's your website?
What, my website?
We want that spreadsheet.
Well, you have to, my email address. Email me directly for that. My email address is my name, joseph.sullender, which is S-U-L-L-E-N-D-E-R, at wellsfargoadvisors.com. There we go. joseph.sullender@wellsfargoadvisors.com.
Okay, good. Now, I just wrote that down, so I'm going to check it out. All right, that's nice of you to do that, and I'm sure you offer that in class as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yeah.
All righty. So we looked at this, and we were angling in at pre-retirement, can we, I won't say move down a notch, but you could say move up a notch. Let's do late mid-career or solid mid-career. What do you got to tell those folks? Now, like Tammy said, they probably are first people, right? More so than CS.
Could have a few in there that were hired in the late mid-early 80s, I guess, under CSRS, who could still be in their 40s or 50s if they were hired real young.
Yeah.
Like me.
You were there.
Not anymore, but I was hired young back then.
You were there for how long?
8 years. Yeah. 8 years.
FBI, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All righty, Joe. Because it's got to be a different set of guide points for them.
I think the big myth is with this, when we do these seminars, and you may have heard these things as well, people that are right on the verge of retirement all say, well, you know, this would have been great to have in my mid-career because I could have done something about it. There's nothing I can do now that I'm on the verge of retirement. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people at that pre-retirement age think. To me, I do financial planning on a personal level for people of all ages. I just see it every day. I find myself more valuable and useful to people right on the verge of retirement. There's a lot more decisions to be made. So when you get back in your mid-career and you're, say, 10 years out from retirement, a lot of the things we know when we're a year away from retirement, we don't really know. We don't know maybe where we're going to live when we retire. We don't know. Maybe we still have kids that are going to be going to college and don't know where and how much that's going to cost us or how long they're going to stay there. So there's a lot of questions at mid-career. What you're trying to do is take as much of that variability as far as where your life may lead, when you want to retire, where you want to live, and just map out a plan, sort of a track that you think you might be going down, and then do the same things we did for people right at retirement. Spreadsheets, online calculators, look at what kind of growth do you need? What sort of savings pattern should you have to be there so you don't wake up a year from your eligibility date and find that you haven't done anything that, you know, you haven't done what you should have to get you to that point.
I think the point to make it mid-career is just to save because, you know, you find a lot of people that just can't get around to putting money away. You know, there's always something else takes priority, whether it's, you know, saving for kids' college and then we forget to save for our retirement. So mm-hmm. I think most important point you make at mid-career is just making sure they are doing something to prepare for retirement.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you find that somebody, let's say late mid-career, is looking forward to the day where maybe there isn't college expense, maybe there isn't as much home mortgage, and now they want the bigger car, they want, you know, not a monster boat, but they want a boat, or they want to take more vacations, and you have to blow the whistle and say, moderate.
Yeah.
Because now you have to divert those dollars to cushion your retirement.
Well, and you bring up a good point, too, in that if just like I said, at pre-retirement, where we're trying to figure out what our take-home pay is minus what we save, and that's really what we live off of. Well, in your mid-career, say you did the same thing. You took your mid-career, you've got two kids, you still have a mortgage, and you look at what you're spending right now. By the time you retire, the kids are grown, those expenses would be gone. Hopefully. It doesn't always work that way. I know. I know. I've heard that my kids aren't quite there yet, but I've heard people.
They want a down payment for a house.
Exactly, exactly. But we assume or hope that that will be the case at some point. And a lot of people maybe are trying to pay off their mortgage early. Maybe that's the plan. But even if they're not, a lot of people leave the area and either downsize their home or move somewhere cheaper. So if I end up where I'm living off of $6,500 a month, and $2,000 of that a month is a mortgage that will go away, then I may only need $4,500 when I retire every month, and my annuity might cover that. So I think it's good at mid-career to kind of see what your, I always call it the delta, what your delta is mm-hmm. between what you think you'll need when you retire and what your annuity actually would be. And what your plans are may dictate that to be a much smaller gap than you might think.
Okay.
Not to discourage them from saving. Right. Don't get me wrong. But at least you know the reality of your situation, which I think is 90% of the battle.
How would you advise somebody at mid-career who is saving in the thrift or dumping as much as they can, maybe even the maximum in the thrift, but that's their only retirement savings? Mm-hmm. So all that money's in the GC, FS, or I funds. How do you advise them, like, how to diversify it? Should they use the L funds? Should they maybe rebalance once a year, twice a year,
yeah,
10
I think
times
the,
a year,
there's
every day?
The first, yeah, every day. The first question has to do with doing these kind of calculators to figure out how aggressive or conservative you need to be. I don't really ever advise anybody to be more aggressive than they need to be. You know, if I can meet my goals by having it all in the G fund, well, I've just guaranteed that I can retire at eligibility.
Right,
so, you know, I don't
have positive.
I hate to do the rule of thumb thing of saying that, you know, you should, you know, you've got 10 years, you have a time frame, you should be aggressive. You should do what you need to do to make your money, make your lifestyle better. And for some people, that can be done by putting it all in the G. As far as whether you use the L funds or not, rather than building your own allocation, I think that has to do with, you know, with your comfort level with all of this. So the L funds are a great default for people that this is a foreign language to. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot of those out there, yeah. And I respect that. I mean, you know, I always use the analogy of, you know, I'm no cook, and I love when you go to the grocery store and you have prepackaged meals that you can just put in the oven. You know, I can deal with that. If somebody gave me 20 ingredients and said, make dinner, I'm lost. And I think that's kind of what you have with the TSP funds, you know, for a lot of people. So, you know, can you build an allocation for yourself that's better tailored to you? Sure. But is the L fund better than you putting it all in the C and not opening statements? Yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. Somebody please call us. Andrew, the engineer, is looking very glum. Nobody's called him this morning, so please call him and say hi to Andrew, and you might want to talk to us as well. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Let me ask you, this might be too technical, but if you're working with somebody that's got some years to correct maybe some things that they didn't do right earlier in their career, when you work your model and you'd say, okay, you're comfortable making, I'm just going to put a number out, 4%, but 4% is not going to get you there. You need to make 6 or you need to make 8. Do you show them the difference of the risk reward? So if you have to bump it up, then you pretty much have to know you make that money, mm-hmm. or you got to save more. Do you get into that kind of calculation?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's tricky. Let me kind of paraphrase what you're saying and see if I've got this right. So somebody comes in, and in order for them to meet, they're investing in a way maybe that would be headed for a 4% annual rate of return. And in order for them to actually retire and meet their goals, they need to jump it up a little. They need to go for a 6 or 7% rate of return. I'm very cautious with this. I try hard not to push people to take more risk than they feel comfortable taking, because the only way that it would work for them to be more aggressive and actually see that success is if they were able to stay with that plan. And I don't mean when they're making 6 or 7%, when they're not, when they're seeing those years where it goes down. And that can cause a tremendous amount of anxiety where we lose all faith in the plan. Always remember that there's more than one variable to this. One variable we can adjust is being more aggressive. Another variable is saving more money. You know, if we can always put more money into the plan so that we don't have to put the foot on the accelerator quite so hard. If you don't feel comfortable taking risk and being able to ride it out during ups and downs, then maybe your answer is just saving a little more money. Maybe it's working part-time in retirement. Maybe there's a lot of different knobs you can turn. And I'm always a little bit more reluctant to turn the knob of making someone more aggressive who has been very conservative for a long time.
Well put.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, too, about being flexible, because on the benefit end of it, between Social Security and the federal retirement benefit, in the course of another 20-year career, if you're at the mid-career level and you might be working another 10 or 20 years, there could be changes in those benefits also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is guaranteed, because, you know, this year especially, we've been hearing about a high 3 to a high 5 change or losing the FERS supplement. So you have to stay flexible, saying, well, if that happens, either I can save more so I can still retire on time, or I could work longer so that I could eliminate the effect if it does change to a high 5. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the key, is to realize that, you know, you change one thing, it might affect the other. So there's a lot of different.
Well, and you have to be
parts.
Flexible, because mm-hmm. even if we run this sophisticated spreadsheet or a Monte Carlo analysis, none of us have a clue how our life is going to pan out. You know,
yeah, well,
from one year
to the
next. You
there
mentioned 25-year-old kids costing more money than they did when they were little.
You didn't know that.
You know, yeah, I've learned something today. You could, you know, find yourself in a very different health issues, like Tammy said. You know, there's. When you pass away, when your spouse passes away. I mean, there's so many variables in this that's why the financial plan does require constantly doing this calculation. You can't do this calculation you know, 5 years before your retirement and go, good, I'm in great shape. You know, you're, as we all know, our expenses and our needs and goals, it change every year.
Well, you know, you are the author of Financial Planning. Financial planning is a succession of moving parts. You said that a time or two ago.
And I talk a lot.
But it's all informative. That one really hit me between the eyes. Mm-hmm. And I've done this all my life, not financial planning, but it's quasi. And when I deal with people with taxes, I'll have a screen up and I can make it different colors, but I say, okay, if you do this, this is what will happen to the tax. And they can see the colors and understand, but verbally, I might as well talk to the wall a lot of the times. And I don't know if you do that when you're talking with somebody.
Do I talk to the wall? Is that the question?
No. You know, you got a screen, and you know, it's red if it's not going to be good, or it's green if it's going to be good. And says, hey, if you just tweak this, this is what will happen. And they'll remember that stuff, but they won't remember the other, at least in my world.
It's all just financial planning is all just about minimizing that variability where you can. You know, it's just painting the scenarios and trying to minimize the risk and variability.
This reminds me back in 87 when the CSRS employees were trying to figure out if it would be better to go to FERS or stay CSRS. So they would say, well, what do you think I should do? They'd ask me. And I'd say, well, what are you leaning towards? And if they said they were kind of leaning towards staying in civil service, I could do a projection making civil service look much better. And if they say, well, I kind of like the idea that you have the matching on the thrift and the Social Security coverage, I'm kind of leaning towards FERS. Okay, fine. I can make projections 20 years out in the future that FERS is going to look better than civil service, just like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, change your return on your thrift account, change how much you save. All of those things could make a difference.
Okay, we got a caller. They wanted to talk to Andrew, but they also wanted to talk to us. So, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Everything's good. Now that you called.
My name is Sharon. And I've got 39 years of service, and I'm looking at coming out in January 3rd, 2016, and I want to maximize my annual leave to 448 hours, and I know they're looking into us being able to roll that amount over into the TSP, but I also want to know how they're planning to do it. Are they going to allow us to do it above the limit, or is the law, it will be a law that allows us to do it in addition to whatever the limit is on the TSP?
I'm not a negative person, but they've been looking at that provision for years.
I wouldn't count on
it. And in a tax-hungry Congress, I don't know that it'll happen. I don't want to shut the door. I just want to make that comment. That's been floating around for a good few
years.
You'll
be retiring kind of in the middle of the next administration, so we'll have to wait till after the election to give you more insight into what might happen with that provision. I don't think you'll see that happen this year.
But let's just say that it did. You know, but that's, you called to, let's just say that it did, but don't bank on it. But so if you moved it all to the TSP, then what you really have is a larger chunk of money that could otherwise be saved if you're trying to save it after paying tax, and you have tax shelter until you hit 70 and a half. And even then, you're not going to have to take out an awful lot.
And it wouldn't change the IRS tax deferral limit. So it'd still be limited to the 22,000.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that if that's a limit, and that's a legislated limit, a law, right?
That's right.
Can this be also a law that allows a waiver for that particular limit for this particular thing? Can they do that?
They can. Will they? I sincerely doubt it. Because remember, tax laws are passed. They're not passed for the federal government or the sub shop down the street or IBM. They're passed for an employer that has an employee. So we as employees have to follow the dictates of what the law says. The thrift may not be exactly the same as a 401k plan, but it's just a gnat's eyelash different. Mm-hmm. And so if they do it for the thrift, they're going to have to do it for 401ks.
They already do it for 401ks.
Yeah.
But they just haven't passed it for the thrift. And that's why I think that there's not going to be a change, because in the private sector where you can take your leave payment and roll it into your 401k, it's still limited to the tax deferral limit.
Right.
So I don't see how Congress would give a special exception for federal employees.
Well, think about it. We're federal employees. They want to get rid of us. They want to reduce the debt.
You're strategizing.
Like a buyout, you know?
You are the whipping employee of the country.
Well, the good news for Sharon is that she's got 39 years of service. She's, you know, I think going to be fine financially, you know, with your replacement income. So whatever you plan to do, I don't think I see you making a major mistake.
Well, thank you. I'm also trying to just figure out all of the ingredients to this particular recipe. I want to know everything. I'm nosy. You use the term rebalancing.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's basic. Could you explain what rebalancing actually is when you talk to about the TSP?
Yeah, rebalancing is the concept where you come up with a mix that you feel comfortable with. Now, if you're going to retire and able to live off of your retirement check and want to just leave your TSP in the G fund, that's no real. There's nothing to rebalance. But if you decide to proceed with, say, 20% in the G, 20, and some sort of split among the different funds,
yeah,
you want to rebalance it. I recommend every year. The idea there is if you do this, say, this year, and one of the categories does particularly well and another does poorly, by rebalancing, you're actually taking from what did well and giving to what did poorly. I know that may sound against the grain of what you want to do logically, but you're maintaining your plan. You're not letting everything get out of whack. If you had been about half stocks, half G fund, let's say back in the 90s,
uh-huh,
when the stock market was going crazy, by the end of the 90s, you would have had like 80% of your TSP would have been in the C fund. Then you go into a bad market, you get a lot bigger downturn that you have to experience. And, going into retirement, I don't think you want that sort of roller coaster.
Okay.
So it would just be once a year. And when I say rebalance, I should be clear. I rebalance the existing balance. That means an intra-fund transfer from one fund to the other. Not because you're changing your contribution allocation doesn't do any good when you're retired. You're not contributing.
Right. Okay. Well, and also if you do it that way, you get more shares if you're buying something. That's
absolutely. Yep.
I just learned that.
Excellent.
Perfect.
If you have any references that you can give people like me that can read about investing and just understanding
you need to run a book.
I was going to say, I wish I did.
Actually,
come to a seminar.
Come to a seminar, and actually, if you come to a seminar, you can ask us questions. There's no charge. You email us questions. Now, we cannot make decisions for you, but we can explain how things work.
Right.
And, of course, you can listen to. Are you in the Metro D.C. area?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We're in 50 agencies within D.C., so we would hope that we would be at yours and you could come on by. Another comment I wanted to make, rather than shut this door on the idea of the accumulated leave going into the TSP, let's just say for the moment that it can't. Let's just say that.
Okay.
If you're going to go out early in the year, you can, quote, front load your TSP by basically taking the first $22,500 that you make in the year and putting it all in the TSP, which would render your taxable portion of your salary to be pretty low. It might cut down on your eating habits, but it certainly could. You could put a lot of your salary in there. Then when the accumulated leave check comes in, depending on your sum total of your income for the year, you might be able to, underline the word might, be able to put money into a deductible IRA. So you might be able to kind of do what you want to do if they don't pass the law.
You might have to work a few months to do that, though, because you can only put 100% of your pay into the TSP. So retiring January 3rd, I think you said, or would it,
that
wouldn't work. But that's an idea we have a lot of people do, where they just work long enough to put their whole paycheck into the TSP until they hit the max and then retire.
But then you don't have that as much of a cushion with your lump sum check.
Right.
Well, see, the thing is, I'm doing the maximum now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, this could be 100% of your paycheck.
In that year, instead of retiring January 3rd, as you're thinking, you might want to retire like March 31st. And then you're only going to get to cash out the 240 hours of leave plus what you save up until March 31st. But what Joe and Bob are saying, that take those paychecks from January to March and dump those into the TSP, the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
So by the time you retire March, you did put your $22,000 in the thrift. Plus, you'll still get a pretty decent lump sum leave check for the 240 plus 3 months of accruals. So that's another way to do it. And Bob said you might even qualify then for a deductible IRA for the rest of the year to do another $5,000 or $6,000.
Oh, okay.
So there's some strategies there.
Yeah, I will come to your seminar.
Please do.
We look forward to it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Sharon.
All right. That was good.
That was a good roundabout.
Oh, my God. Andrew's got the phone in his hand. I hope it's another call. No.
He's
hanging up. All righty. So we worked our way. We're late mid-career. Let's do beginning career, early mid-career, late beginning career.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot, especially with the caller and all the examples we've given about variability, you know, about the uncertainty of, I mean, you've added another layer of uncertainty is where are the rules, what the rules say, where are the laws, you know, what do the tax laws look like? Well, when I mentioned in mid-career how that variability, you're just trying to carve a path and say, all right, I think this is where the rest of my life's going to go. If you're early in your career, it's just question marks to everything, you know, of, again, if we have kids that we're dealing with for education, we may not even have children at that point, but plan to. I mean, there's all sorts of variability there. Where I'm going to retire, if I'm going to stay with the government through my whole career, if I'm married or going to get married, what's my spouse? So there's so much variability. Frankly, what I tell those people to do is try to save as much as you can and take as much advantage of these tax shelters like the TSP, the Roth IRA, the IRA. These are things that younger people can be reluctant to do because it does tie your money up for quite some time. But they're so tax advantaged to be able to do it. You know, so early in career, that's what I would tell somebody to do.
Okay, we've got another call.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, what can we do for you?
Okay, I am a federal retiree. I've been retired for the last 5 years, and I'm almost turning 70. Now, what I'm looking at is coming to this, probably next year, the 70 and a half rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which direction to go in, whether I should take an annuity or whether I should go into the Roth TSP, or just exactly what to do.
Well, first of all, you won't be able to go into the Roth TSP because that's only going to be for new money coming in. So that's only going to be open to employees who are still putting money into the TSP. So you can cross that one off your list.
Okay.
But you're talking mainly about TSP money, right?
And or IRA, non-Roth IRA?
No.
Just TSP.
Okay, because the same rule applies for traditional IRAs. It's the same rule. But anyway, if we don't have any of those, then there is no rule to be concerned with.
I think the first thing to realize is what I think Bob can elaborate on this too, is the amount that you're required to take out from the TSP. It's not all of the TSP. It's not a tremendous amount. I think what's it, less than 4%
the
first year?
It's like 3.6% the first year.
Yeah.
As Joe said, there's a myth that all this money's got to come out. In fact, very little has to come out the first 5 years, and after that, a little bit more.
It's kind of based on life expectancy.
Life
right?
expectancy, mm-hmm. But in their chart, they use 115 as kind of the end line. And even then, you got 2 years to take it out.
Right. So you don't necessarily ever have to deplete it unless you live past 115.
So you could do this, just easy homework, figure up roughly what the TSP is going to be worth in that year that you hit 70 and a half, and we'll make a comment on that in a second, mm-hmm. and multiply that by 4%. That's the most that will have to come out of the TSP. You could take out more, but you can't take out any less.
And you can do that either as a monthly payment based on your life expectancy, where that amount will come out every month, or you can just tell the thrift plan, send you $25 a month, and at the end of the year, they'll calculate what it is that you needed to take out, and they'll send you a supplemental check. Both of those would be monthly payments, not the annuity.
You just can't do nothing. You know, you have to make sure that you do take that dollar.
Yeah, and please make sure you do it, because if you don't do it, they'll make you wish you did.
And
meaning the IRS. The penalties are pretty steep.
And you mentioned the annuity. I think to add to that is what we're suggesting is you would just be taking that amount out you're required to withdraw. The advantage of doing it that way is you still have a balance there. If you wanted to increase those withdrawals next year, take more money out, you could. If you choose the annuity, they're going to send you monthly checks just like the TSP withdrawal would be. The difference there is that your balance is gone. You're going to get checks for the rest of the month, rest of your life every month, but you're basically giving up your TSP for the lifetime guarantee to get those checks.
Okay.
So that seems like a bit of a drastic step to just avoid, I mean, because you're not really avoiding paying the taxes.
Right, and or you could elect to take less than the full amount out, but I think Joe's real focus is annuities are based on interest rates at the time one buys the annuity. Interest rates now are pretty low. And being a young 70 and a half, you have a lot of years left, so that purchasing any portion with the thrift money right now might not be in your best interest. If anybody knew what interest rates were going to be, they wouldn't be on the air.
The other thing with the annuity, too, is not much of leaving a legacy. because the money's with MetLife, and when you die, it kind of dies with you. So with leaving the money in, either in the TSP or moving it to an IRA, assuming that at the time of your death there's still money left, you can leave that to either a charity or family member, whoever.
Okay, but I do have an opportunity to leave it in the TSP.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, I think I need a financial planner. Seriously, I really do. To someone to help me and guide me along with that.
I think we have one here.
Yeah.
I think his name is Joe.
Well, we do get my contact stuff. I mean, I'll be happy to answer whatever questions you have and help guide you through it.
And what's your contact again?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I should say that, shouldn't I? My email address, easiest way to just shoot me a note, is joseph.sullender.
All right, I'm writing this down.
Okay.
Joseph.sullender,
which is S-U-L-L-E-N-D-E-R.
Okay.
And it's at Wells Fargo Advisors. And that's Advisors with an O, by the way.
Wells Fargo
Advisors.
Okay.
.com.
.com. Okay, spell your last name again, please.
Sure, it's S as in Sam, U-L-L.
L, uh-huh.
E-N, mm-hmm. D-E-R.
V-E-R.
D as in David.
D-E-R, okay.
That's it.
Okay, so I can contact you and...
Absolutely.
And beg for help.
That sounds good.
Sometimes it's a smart thing.
It won't make
do.
You beg for help.
If you're at an agency that we come to...
No, she's retired.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I am retired.
Okay, then keep listening to this show.
Exactly.
Thank you for calling. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Sure enough. All righty. So late beginning and early mid.
That was a good call for people who are retired. That's the big question. Like, what do I do with this money? Especially if I really don't need it.
There's a common misconception that a lot has to come out. Now, 5 years ago, a lot did have to come out. And then they had people broke at 81 and 85 because the life expectancy only ran to that age.
You know, I think with people living longer, I think this is one of the, her call actually brings to mind something. We always go through the people right on the verge of retirement, the people in mid-career, and the people early on. We don't spend as much time talking about the people that are already retired. And like I said, I think financial planning becomes more crucial for those people and the people right on the verge, because frankly, if a 30-year-old doesn't listen to anything that we say, well, then they can fix it when they're 50. It's going to be a lot harder. But for somebody 70 to make a huge error on what she does with her TSP, it could be irrevocable in a lot of ways. It could be hard to recover from that. And I've seen that. I've met with people that are in their 80s that have either purchased a product that didn't make sense for them or been too aggressive and now find themselves in real dire straits. So I would actually say that group needs more attention as far as focusing on
That comes up for that group is the people who are qualifying, just maybe just retiring, but they're in their 60s already. And they say, should I go ahead and start taking my Social Security benefit when I'm 62, even though it's going to be reduced 25%, I'll get it longer. Or should I wait till I'm 66 and start drawing money out of my TSP while I'm waiting, so then I'll get the bigger check for a shorter time, but it's going to be a much bigger check? How do you advise your clients?
I generally think that it makes sense to take, once you don't want to take Social Security before full retirement age if you're going to work, because it will be docked in the earnings test. So if you're definitely done working, I would take it whenever you can get it. Exactly. Yeah. Then if you are still working and you're 66 years old or whatever your full retirement age is, that would be when I would take it as well. And then if I needed supplemental income, this is a big thing just to say to the caller as well as anybody in this situation. The first place I would go is not to the TSP, not to my IRA. That's taxable money. If I pull $10,000 out of my TSP, I owe income taxes on $10,000. If I have a savings account, I'm going to spend that first. That money wouldn't cost me anything to withdraw. If I have a CD, I'll wait till it matures and spend that money. If I have mutual funds, I would just in my name, I would pay a capital gains taxes on the earnings, much smaller bite. So my attitude is to take out all the money that impacts me the least tax-wise first, and then go into the TSP and IRA. And for a lot of people, that's the only time they have to withdraw. It's like the caller is when they're forced to, you know, when they make her start taking the money out. And she may have very well been doing you know, what we just described.
Yeah. Taxes are kind of the bane of creating wealth. You know, when you hear the term wealth, you think of somebody very wealthy, but wealth is anybody. How do I keep the most money? Mm-hmm. Well, you protect it from taxes. Now, I'm not saying anything, you shouldn't pay your taxes, but if you have three pots of money and one's going to cost you more to withdraw from it than the other two, why take it out of the one that costs the most?
I think a real simple thing is that a lot of people who have their TSP account, I think some people think because we call it an investment that they're going to be paying capital gains taxes when they take the money out. They don't realize it's ordinary income tax, not the same as your mutual funds and your other investments that you might have outside of the TSP or IRAs.
That's the same thing for a traditional IRA. And the thought process there, people get sometimes agitated when I tell them that. And I said, listen, here's the trade-off. They'll allow you to put this money in and not be taxed over, you know, a lifetime or a period of time. But when it does come out, they sure aren't going to give you the preferred tax rate. And then they go, oh, I get it.
Well, the other thing a lot of people think I find is that when you get to retirement, that you should start withdrawing from your TSP and IRA. Because that's what you were told. You've saved your whole career, so you'd have money in retirement. Well, if you don't need it, don't withdraw it. I mean, I have clients that have, you know, other money they either inherited or saved on other that call me up and say, well, I'm ready to start taking money out of my IRA. I said, what do you need? How much do you need monthly? Oh, I don't really need anything. I just feel like that I should take it out. Well,
what are you gonna do with it?
The thing, there's so many advantageous benefits to leaving that money in there, not only for your taxes, but for your heirs as well. Don't take it out just to pay taxes on it, you know, because then those people, what do? They don't spend it because they didn't need it. And they go put it in a savings account or an investment where, guess what? It's going to be taxed some more. So why not just wait until you actually need the money?
Have to take it out.
And then you're spot on with that. But sometimes when I'll say that in class and they say, well, my heirs will have to pay the tax. So I have two responses to it. I hope they pay a lot of taxes on it because they got a lot of money. And if they look at me like, what are you, from Mars? Then I say, why don't you do this in your estate planning? If you're going to leave some money to your heirs, leave them the non-TSP IRA money and leave the TSP IRA money to charity. Then nobody pays taxes on it.
And then they all of a sudden think, wow, my kid's paying taxes. Is it that bad?
Yeah, you can do worse than pay taxes. You cannot pay taxes because there isn't anything there to pay taxes
exactly.
on. All right. So now the third rail of trying to get to people, the beginning career folks, and I don't know that anybody's had grand success with this. They just kind of don't want to hear it. They just got a job. They're making money. They're paying off their school bills. Or if they didn't go to school, they're buying things that they couldn't afford before. But if you could approach them early on and get them into a savings environment, how do you get them, Joe?
And to be fair to that group, I have to say, I don't know if you all feel this in the seminars, but when you talk to people in that age, I've found this generation seems to be getting that a little bit, that they need to save, at least the ones that are willing to talk to me, maybe.
Well, when you ask them, what do they expect from Social Security, most of them say nothing.
They're very cynical in that they know that.
And they may actually not even have a retirement, so it's going to be called save.
Exactly. I mean, whereas maybe their grandparents retired on full-blown pensions, they never really had to worry about saving, and their parents were in that sort of baby boom group that had to do it all in a panic because they hadn't done it early on. This group seems to know the reality of the situation, but I do think it's just trying. It's very difficult when you're first starting out to think, you know, when you're trying to pay bills and maybe buy your first home and save, you know, an emergency fund and all these pay off college. I mean, there's so much going on and a smaller amount of income. My main advice is just make sure you do something. If you're a TSP participant, and obviously if you're new, you're in the FERS system, put 5% in the TSP before you wake up in the morning, because that money gets doubled by the match. Mm-hmm. So put 5% in the TSP. If you can do that, then I feel like you're at least putting a drop in the bucket to getting you towards your retirement goals. Then as more income comes, if you get a raise, give your retirement a raise at the same time you give yourself one.
Yeah, that's like making 100% on your money, isn't it? If they match you.
You can't beat that.
You can't get a better deal than that.
No. And on a pre-tax basis, you're putting that money away. So if you put 5%, let's say, is $2,500, you make $50,000. You put 5% in, $2,500 becomes $5,000. You could have taken home, what, $1,700? So you're basically tripling your money when you look at it that way.
Because I think the other thing they have to realize is even that 5% is not 5% of their take-home pay.
Right.
Because it's reducing what they have to pay the tax on. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. not that big of a difference in their take-home.
No, it isn't.
It isn't.
And when this Roth TSP comes around, and nobody should make any comments on it until June, I guess, when it comes out, or late May. But listen to the show, because we'll have the director of the TSP on, along with one of...
Yeah, I think employees will be getting information about that end of February when they get their participant statements. So the TSP is starting to get those things ready to distribute so that people are informed, have education on it before they have to make decisions.
And probably Joe and I could arm wrestle on this, but I think somebody very young could do without the tax benefit, get it into the Roth and have it grow, and then later on go to the deductible.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Totally agree.
Oh, good.
I do. Plus, we only have like 3 or 4 more minutes. I don't want to get into it. No, I totally agree with you.
All righty. So we've hit this all. I don't know that we have enough time. We seem to have hit a sensitive spot last week when we talked about the 5-year versus the 3-year high three. And the comment was really based on if you were basically half out the door and the 5-year high five was coming in, there isn't a rush to get out. To get this high three, but we'll probably hit that on another show because we have less than 2 minutes left.
Yeah, and you realize none of this has happened yet, and my prediction is still you're not going to see big changes happening this year. So I wouldn't make any rush decisions to retire because of what Congress might do, because Congress takes a long time to act on these things, and there's all kind of variables of things they can do to take the money somewhere else.
Yeah, and my thing to add to that would be, again, why it's so important to actually do the calculations and the math on what your situation mm-hmm. looks like. See, I mean, don't just automatically assume that it ruins your future. You know, take the time to sit down and do the math.
Okay. Final comments, Joe?
That's it. Just it. Yeah, I've said it. You tell me.
Listen to Joe.
There you go.
And listen to Tammy, and you'll be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Tammy?
Just say, as we've been saying all along, do the planning, understand your benefits, understand how to target those goals. You know, goal setting, as Joe said, is probably the most important thing to do, and adjust your goals.
Okay, and listen to the show next week because it'll be everybody's second best topic to listen to, income taxes.
Oh, yay.
So all the insomniacs, please listen. Anyway, Ed Zerndorf and I will be on, and we'll talk about what to look for in preparing your 2011 return and what to look forward to in 2012, but maybe more so 2013. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.